Hello, everybody, and welcome to Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And we do not have a lot of news to talk about today. I kind of talked a lot yesterday about how hopefully there would be and the dominoes would fall. Unfortunately, this is not the case. However, things around the league are still starting to shake out. The Texans announced all of their assistants. The Bengals are still kind of making decisions. You know, Bengals and Dolphins, who just got their head coaches in the building, are now going to go around and figure out who their coaches are going to be. And hopefully, very soon, we kind of see everything shake out and we know who is coaching where. It's still the odds-on favorite is Rick Dennison to be, you know, Gary Kubiak's, like, right-hand man to be the offensive line coach. However, Bill Callahan, who is rumored to want out of Washington, he plays with the Reds, or he coaches with the Redskins, and he wants out. He was going to go to Cincinnati, where his son is coaching now. However, they are rumored to have a deal in place with a Texas A&M coach for offensive line coach. So Bill Callahan is now either stuck in Washington, where, to be honest, they'll probably just block him, or he's a free agent and he would be a really interesting name. I highly doubt that the Vikings are going to be able to land him. It really seems like it's still just going to be Rick Dennison, and making it official is just kind of waiting for all this other stuff to shake out, and then it's going to shake out and we're going to have Dennison, and that will be that. Elsewhere in Vikings news, things are fairly quiet. However, they did put in a waiver claim with Tanner Vallejo, who played for the Browns. He's kind of a depth-level linebacker. I was looking on Twitter and, like, Reddit and stuff and saw people talking about how, ooh, maybe that means that Barr is out or whatever. In the offseason, I just kind of like to caution against that sort of zero-sum logic. I think most teams at this time of year, now that it's the offseason, it's time to build a roster, I think most teams are thinking, okay, you bring 90 guys into camp. And then you get to watch them play for a month before you have to decide between the two. So bringing someone into camp technically doesn't mean that it's like an indictment of everyone else who plays that position. And I think we see this every year, right? Every time that the Vikings will look at a wide receiver, they go, oh, you know, they've given up on Treadwell, or they've given up on, you know, or maybe they think like Adam Thielen isn't going to stay around or something like that. And I really don't think that that's the case, especially with the Vikings, who have said a lot. You know, when they're asked about that kind of thing, they say, listen, we just, you know, Rick Spielman basically says, listen, I get the best players I can in here and I let Zimmer cut who Zimmer wants to cut. And that's really the way that they function, is very kind of segmented like that. So Rick Spielman doesn't have to worry about if he brings in a linebacker, you know, is he gonna like push Barr out of the organization? Well, technically, if Barr is worth keeping, he'd be better than Tanner Vallejo anyways. And if he's not better than Tanner Vallejo, then he isn't worth keeping. And what's nice is that you have a month to watch that and determine the answer to that question before you actually have to decide between the two. So there is no cost to bringing him in, regardless of your opinion of Anthony Barr. And that example applies really everywhere on the roster. So they're going to bring in people. They're going to draft the players they draft. They're going to bring in the free agents they bring in. And, you know, they put in a claim on Vallejo. Unfortunately, the way waiver claims work, the Vikings are going to have a pretty low priority. It is prioritized in the same order as the draft, which means that the Vikings, who pick number 18, are the 18th most prioritized team. So all 17 teams above them in the draft will get kind of right of refusal over waiver claims before the Vikings would actually get awarded that player. In this case, a lot of people put in a claim on Tanner Vallejo, which further kind of disputes the idea that like they're trying to replace Barr or something. Like every team wanted this guy. And the Arizona Cardinals, who get first right of refusal because they have the first pick, they were the worst team in the league record-wise, they were the ones awarded the player. And that is going to continue to go on like until the start of the new league year and all the free agents, you know, it becomes a free-for-all. So that probably does it for personnel news for the next like foreseeable future. We might see some cuts or restructures happen in the next month or two as we approach the new league year. But for now, we probably won't see a lot of news. But what we did see was a rumor from Andrew Kramer, is where I saw it at least. I'll link that tweet in the show notes. But that the Vikings were considering moving Riley Reiff to left guard. And I think it spurred a lot of conversation because that is an idea that if you've been following the Vikings for the last 6 years, like should set off a million alarms and red flags for you. And this prompted me to really make the main topic of this show, just kind of the differences between offensive line positions and talking about them in terms of value and in terms of what sort of athletes you're looking at. You know, this will be kind of one that I will look back to and toss back to in the future, especially when we talk about draft prospects and free agents and stuff, when you talk about body type and, you know, what kind of guy are you looking for at tackle? You know, you look for like longer arms and bigger, you know, there's a lot of different traits and a different type of athlete that plays tackle versus the type of athlete that plays guard. And a lot of times the type of athlete that would make a good guard in the NFL plays tackle in college because things are a little different in college. And that happens all the time in the draft. I think Connor Williams was the most recent example. He played tackle at Texas. He plays guard currently in Dallas because his body just is better suited for that. We'll talk about like what those differences are and what that means. But in terms of Riley Reiff, the rumor is that, you know, if the Vikings, say, draft a really good tackle, I'm not familiar at all with the tackle prospects right now, and we'll have like 20 episodes between free agency and the draft to talk about this, so I'm not too worried about it. But the rumor goes that if the Vikings want to draft a left tackle, and say they draft a player that they want to start at left tackle day one, and he's great in camp and he's like going to be better than Reiff and they want him to start there, that they would kick Reiff into guard. And I think my philosophy when it comes to this type of thing is I do think it's similar to the way the Vikings behave, and it's that just get the players in the room and then figure out how to shuffle them out afterwards. And that's really the way that things are kind of denominated between Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer, right? Spielman brings in the players and he says, I'm just going to get as many good players as we can. If we have two very good left tackles, that's not a really bad problem to have. We'll move one over, or we'll just have a good backup, or we'll trade one. We'll figure something out. And that'll be up to Mike Zimmer. And I'm just going to get in the best players that I can, because to be honest, finding good players is the hard part. If you find enough good players where you have too many good players, that's an excellent problem to have, and it's not that difficult of a problem to solve. It is way harder to get that many good players in the first place. So I think that when it comes to this kind of thing, I'm totally okay with them going into the draft with this idea that, listen, we will not say no to left tackles just because Riley Reiff is in the building. I think moving him to guard is probably not the solve. He hasn't played guard since, I think it was 2009 in Iowa, was the last time he actually took reps in a game situation at left guard. And I mean, it's been 10 years. I don't think that's a good idea. The differences are very stark. We'll talk about it a little bit later. But at the same time, say, you know, you draft a left tackle with your first pick and you don't want to bench that guy because he's good, it does leave you with a weird situation. And maybe the conversation was just, okay, what do we do about that? You know, I know the Vikings, and they've talked about this a bunch. If you look at any of the press conferences Rick Spielman gives around draft time, they go over every single situation and they pore over it with a fine tooth comb. And a conversation like that is not one that I'm surprised that they're having. So we are going to talk a lot more about the merits of position switching and stuff on the offensive line. But first, we do have to step away for a quick ad break. And when we come back, we'll dive deep. See you guys in a minute. All right, we are back. And before we get into the rest of the episode, I almost forgot to talk about the pain bracket for today. So we had, unsurprisingly, the 98 NFC Championship game blew out the Darren Nelson drop in 1987. We are moving on to another pretty high-profile loss, the last Super Bowl loss the Vikings experienced. That was Super Bowl 11 against the Raiders, going up against the Demetrius Underwood situation, the Vikings' first-round draft pick that didn't end up playing a snap for the team due to off-field and mental health-related issues. So the question, as always, is which one hurts most to think about? Go vote in the pain bracket. It's always very fun. Moving on to the actual topic of the episode, let's talk about position switches, because it came up in the news yesterday, and that means that it was kind of the topic of conversation online and something that I think the Vikings have really struggled with. And I want to go over really quick the history of this, because if you are either new to the team because, you know, you joined because you liked in 2017 or something like that, or if you just like haven't been paying that close of attention to, you know, the goings on the offensive line, it's really a recurring theme. Or if you just want a refresher, I think it's worth just kind of going over that. So I want to start in 2014, because that was the first year with Mike Zimmer, and, you know, that was Rick Spielman's first truly, like, hand-picked coach. And I think the 2014 iteration of the team, everything before that, I think, is not relevant. You know, looking at the decisions the team made when Leslie Frazier was coach and stuff like that, I don't think it really reflects on what we expect the 2019 team to do. But, you know, so if you start in, like, the 2014 season, I think that the first thing that I think of is Charlie Johnson. you remember, he came over as a left tackle. He protected Peyton Manning's blind side for a long time. And he came over, and when the Vikings drafted Matt Khalil, he kicked inside to left guard, and he was not excellent there. He ranked 76th in pass blocking efficiency. Essentially, if you think about guards as, you know, there's two on every team, which means there's 64 starting guards, he did not rank in the starting quality level of guards. He was actually a little worse than what we saw from Tom Compton in that regard this year. So obviously that didn't work out. He was a much better left tackle in Indianapolis. He played left tackle for the Vikings before Matt Khalil got there, but kicking him inside to guard, it just didn't work. And I think those offensive lines from, like, you know, 2013, 2014, and into the struggles of 2015 were relatively stable. You had Loadhold on the right side, you had Sullivan was always the center, you had Khalil, like, for better or worse, was the left tackle. And the guards were kind of shuffling between, like, Jeff Schwartz and Brandon Fusco, and then Charlie Johnson on the left side. Brandon Fusco, after he got hurt in 2014, he came back, and in 2015 he played at left guard, and that also was a problem. Credit where it's due, however, in that same year, Mike Harris, who was a kind of low-level tackle, a kind of backup tackle type, kicked inside to guard that year and actually played pretty well. And unfortunately, in 2016, he had the issue that ended up, you know, ending his career. And in 2016, a guy named TJ Clemmings joins the team. Now, he played left tackle at Pitt, but he was already subject to a lot of position switches. If you aren't familiar at Pitt, he actually was recruited as a defensive lineman and played at defensive line for a long time. And when the Vikings drafted him, he only had like 2 years of offensive line experience, which in hindsight should have been a much bigger red flag than it ended up being, but I digress. He comes in having only played left tackle and having only played offensive line for like 2 years, and then they move him over to right tackle. And if you remember, in that training camp, they tried to move him into guard and realized that it wasn't going to work because he just didn't quite have the body for it. And we'll talk a lot more about kind of the merits of what that means. But they shuffled him between right tackle and left tackle constantly throughout his career. We know how, you know, high profile of a disaster he was. And in the 2017 preseason, he didn't even make the roster. So he was really just this, like, ruined player that hasn't really been able to, like, make any waves, even though he's gotten other opportunities elsewhere, because this dude was, like, riddled with potential. He had, like, the picture-perfect tackle body. And in 2017, the Vikings pick up Mike Remmers. He has an okay year in 2017 at right tackle. He was fine. I think definitely a level of right tackle play you can be at least satisfied with. And then in the playoffs, he kicks into right guard. He has some of his worst games, and his season at right guard in 2018 was one of the worst seasons of his career, up there with the seasons he played at left tackle in Carolina, which just kind of goes to show this guy is a right tackle and really isn't very good at playing any other positions beside that. And all of this is anecdotal evidence with just the Vikings, which I think we should be careful of, even though that's the team we follow, is that, like, you know, just because the Vikings are bad at something doesn't mean that it's bad for every team. But switching positions in the NFL is a really difficult thing. But don't take my word for it. I weigh like 150 soaking wet, so I'm not exactly speaking from experience here, which is why I think this is one of those times where I have to defer to people who do know what they're talking about. And there was a great piece written at Shake in the Southland, which is the SB Nation blog for the Clemson Tigers, written about this exact thing, essentially just outlining the basics and differences between the positions. You know, what is different about being a center versus being a guard versus being a tackle. So starting on the inside, the first thing that most teams tend to rely on their centers for is calling the protections. And I think this is something that it gets like way too overlooked. Even in, you know, Pro Football Focus grades, they don't credit the center very often for protection grades. This is something I've confirmed with them. They don't, if the protection call is wrong, which is usually the center's fault, they won't downgrade the center for that because they don't know if it's the center or the, you know, the quarterback made a bad protection slide or something. And so they just kind of like leave it out and just don't try to speculate, which I guess is right for them. But it leads to that being a very underrated part of the center's job. This is something John Sullivan was incredible at. And even down the stretch of his career, when he is definitely not the athlete that he used to be, he can still get the protection in the right place. And I think that Rams offensive line, with all the veteran presences that they have there, is really, you know, conducive to that, because John Sullivan can communicate with guys that have been in the league for a long time, and they can really get have an easy time, you know, getting on the same page. And you're going to hear chemistry come up a lot in this whole rundown, because it is very important for an offensive line. They need to be able to kind of read the same things on a defense, and without actually being able to say anything to each other, they all need to be like having the same thoughts. It's a very difficult place to get into, especially when you've had a whole bunch of turnover over a whole bunch of years like the Vikings have. But basically, the center is responsible for the protection calls. And what that means is that the center has to look at where the defensive line is and where the linebackers are primarily, and then whoever else is in the box, and say, all right, this is how many people are in front of us. And for a zone scheme, it's essentially figuring out who's blocking who based on who is in front of who. And that's all before the ball is even snapped. Then they have to snap the ball, and they have to do so cleanly every single time, because it, you know, even if the quarterback can get a handle on the ball, if it's a bad snap, that will take their eyes off of the defense for just a split second. And I mean, like, try it right now in your living room or wherever you're listening to this. You know, try looking at one thing and then looking very quickly back to the other thing, and pay attention to how long it takes your brain to kind of like locate and register and like focus on whatever you looked back to. Now imagine doing that, but you know, that takes you what, like a half second, and you only get two and a half seconds as a quarterback to read a defense. So even if it's not like a botched snap that turns into a fumble, and you only see that like twice a year, a bad snap can still have a huge effect on a play. So you have to do that cleanly, and then you have to get up and block. And that's why centers get a lot of help with double teams, and they get a lot of help with double teams, and that means that they give up fewer pressures. So, and you know, we talked about this when we did our offensive line review. A center that gives up a lot of pressures is a pretty bad thing, because they get so much help, it actually makes up for those disadvantages and then some. But because of all of these things that the center has to worry about that aren't like physically blocking, that's usually where you put the smallest player with, you know, the most strength issues, basically. And that was Pat Elflein for the Vikings, and might continue to be Pat Elflein. I think a lot of people, you know, want to sign. I even did in my own mock offseason, Matt Paradise, the center from the Giants that would come in and then kick Elflein over to guard. But Elflein is a nice fit at center because of those strength issues. That's where you can hide them the most easily. And I think that's the most important thing to understand about the center, is that it's a lot more mental than physical, at least in, you know, compared to the rest of the positions on the offensive line. Couple all that with the different steps that you kind of have to take when you start by snapping a ball instead of just getting directly out of the stance and switching from center to guard, or even like center to tackle, like Ethan Posick did in Seattle, can be a really, really difficult transition. And we're going to talk a little bit more about guard and tackle. We'll go into all that same depth with those positions as well. But first, I do have to take a second ad break. So we are going to step away for a minute, and I will see you on the other side, and we'll talk about guard and tackle. All right, we are back. So let's talk about guards. This is going to be something that I think is very relevant to the Vikings, and especially their off-season discussions, both fans and the discussions inside the building, is what the Vikings look for in a guard. Not specifically amongst other guards, but just what kind of humans does it require to play guard in the NFL? And I think as a guard, you need two specific things. There's two kind of jobs that guards have in pass blocking and run blocking. And in pass blocking, you need to basically be strong enough to stand up to a defensive tackle and cerebral enough to know when you're supposed to double team and who you're supposed to block. So you don't need to quite be as cerebral as centers, who need to often like make those decisions. You just need to be smart enough to know what you're being told to do when it's told to you in code and in a moment of like a second. And it's a specific kind of smart, you know, that kind of improvisational smart, that think on your feet kind of like mental acuity. And I think that comes up on the interior more often, because that's where you see a lot of the blitzing linebackers come from, you know. So from just a pure strength perspective, you are going to go up, and you know, you're not always going to even get to double team, but you're going to go up against the biggest and strongest person on the other team. You're going to go up against the nose tackle, the Linval Joseph, you know, the Haloti Ngata, the Ndamukong Suh. These are the biggest, strongest, nastiest guys, and you need to be strong enough to not get blown back on your butt when they come get you. Now, you don't need to be stronger than that person. If you are, you're probably, you know, going to be put at that position in high school and not be playing offensive line in the first place. But you need to be strong enough where when you get put one-on-one against a nose tackle, you don't get put on your butt. That is the level of strength you need. You don't need to beat them. You just need to be able to hold your own for, you know, 2 or 3 seconds. And in the run game, which I think is what the Vikings are going to focus a lot more on, and this is kind of, this is the type of lineman that they've gotten, you need to be mobile. As guards, especially in a manpower scheme, but it, I mean, this happens all the time. This is something that really, I think Nick Easton checked this box for the Vikings, and that's why they went out and traded for him. Pat Elflein also switches this box, which is why I think if they did move him to guard, it's a more sensical option than something like moving Riley Reiff into guard. But you need to be able to pull. And what pulling means, you might hear people talking about the pulling guard all the time on broadcasts or in other like analysis, but what that entails is, if you imagine an offensive line blocking, the guard will slip away, they'll actually back up, they won't hit a defensive lineman, and they'll run all the way across the formation and hit someone on the outside. It's kind of a makeshift way of sliding the whole team downwards. Now, in a zone scheme, you more often will just slide the entire offensive line to the left or the right and have everyone run a little bit rather than having one guy try to outrun the whole rest of the line and run out to the other side. This all very much depends on your scheme and strategy, and there's pros and cons to each, but everybody has to have guards that can pull, that can run around, that can trap, which is a very similar motion. What a trap play entails is, say, like, Tom Compton would be instructed to not block the defensive tackle and let the defensive tackle go, where, and then Mike Remmers would kind of sneak across the back of the formation and hit the defensive tackle from the side as he's running in. If you can kind of visualize that, you get this idea of a guard hitting a defensive tackle from the side, and you have a lot more leverage when you're pushing from someone from the side than when you're trying to push them from head on. And that's kind of the point of trap plays. It worked really well against Sheldon Richardson all year, especially in the preseason game and the regular season game against Seattle. It's something that he just knew he would fall for. But that's like a plan that teams will often use to try to neutralize really good defensive tackles. And then you have to be pretty quick. When you're on the interior, this applies to centers too. When you're on the interior, you know, you're starting with your face right up against the guy that you are going to be blocking against, especially in a zone scheme where there's a lot less kind of shifting around and moving and pulling and like shuffling. You're really just blocking the guy in front of you, and you are usually inches away from him. So you have to kind of throw your punch or kind of throw your hands into their chest as fast as you can. And you have to get up, take those 2 steps, the first 2 steps, so you get into a nice, like, good leverage, you know, kind of squatty stance so that all of your muscles are pushing the way they're supposed to, and throw that punch and get there. And you have to do it in the snap of a finger. This is something that Mike Remmers wasn't very good at. This is something that Arif Hassan harped on all the way from training camp in Norse Code, on his podcast Norse Code and in The Athletic. He talked a lot about Mike Remmers being too slow at this, because, and we'll talk about it more, tackles usually can take a step or two before they throw their punch, and the timing is a lot more important. For guards, it's get those hands up as quickly as you can, and Mike Remmers was really too used to the kind of patient style that requires you to play tackle, and that was one of the reasons that he struggled all year. And I think that Riley Reiff, really a career tackle, he could be susceptible to the same habits. So moving on to tackles, you need a much different type of human to play tackle. You need to be taller and longer. This is something that Mike Zimmer's actually on record talking a lot about Rashad Hill, and that he has very long, lanky arms. He's a very tall person, and that helps him play tackle, and it's part of the reason why he was able to kind of work up from, like, undrafted practice squad guy to actually anointed week one starter. He has a lot of length, and that helps, because if you imagine, you know, imagine a pass rush, like, from a Von Miller or a Danielle Hunter, you know, and they're kind of running up the field and the tackle is kind of trying to strafe with them, if you can kind of picture that in your head. And imagine all of the different directions that edge rusher could go. He could try to go up and around the guy and just be faster. He could try to cut inside. He could try to go right at you. And so you have to kind of cover this very long amount of space. Whereas on the interior, you'll hear people talk about it being like a fist fight in a phone booth all the time. On the exterior, there's a lot more space to guard. So when you have longer arms, it means that you can get punches on people, or you know, throw your hands into people and start pushing them when they're further away from you, and the longer your arms are, the larger the spaces that you can defend. It's honestly the same principle that, you know, we look at for defenders in the draft when we're looking at arm length for them. We look at tackles' arm length for the same reason. It's just a matter of, like, how far away does somebody have to be from you before you can, like, throw a punch on them? And so when you talk about moving a tackle into guard, usually you're talking about, you know, a guy who played tackle in college but doesn't have the arm length to translate that to the NFL when he's going to be going up against faster athletes. And that's really what kind of applied to, like, guys like Connor Williams last year. Or I think there's some guys in this draft, you know, and we'll kind of talk about that and refer back to this episode when it's time to talk about guys like that. But they, you know, they translate better to guard because they just don't have the arm length to survive at tackle, but they have all the acuity and all the ability to still go up against, like, you know, big defensive tackles in the NFL. And for a tackle, the footwork is a lot different because, you know, for the same reason, you're a lot more responsible with your first two or three steps for covering distance. You know, imagine Von Miller is darting upfield trying to get past you. You have to cover all that depth and cover a whole bunch of ground just as fast as Von Miller is running, and you're going backwards. That requires a very specific footwork. And there's some really interesting stuff, and I'll link all the resources for this in the show notes so that you can look yourself. But there's all manner of interesting, like, footworks and different steps and J steps and kick steps and stuff that offensive linemen use to, like, accomplish different things depending on what the play call is and depending on what they're trying to defend against and what sort of moves they're trying to defend against. And tackles need a much larger range because they just need to cover more ground. You need to run backwards as fast as Danielle Hunter is running forwards. That's really hard to do. And that's also why height is very important, because you need those long strides when you're trying to backpedal and keep up with a speedy edge rusher. But you also have to have your fair share of strength. This is why tackles are a lot more valuable. As you're listening to me describe this, you might be thinking to yourself, okay, that's all the things, right? They need to be fast, they need to be tall, they need to be strong. That's all the things an athlete can be. And it's kind of true. Tackles are rare, and it's why they're more valuable. And I don't know if it's easier to go up against a Von Miller than it is, you know, to go up against a guy like Damon Harrison or Aaron Donald, but it is definitely the kind of person that wins the latter is just more common. You know, the guys that get put into offensive line in high school and college are, you know, big, beefy, strong, stocky guys. And to play tackle, you need to be big and strong, but also tall and long. That is a really difficult combination to find, and it's why tackles are pretty rare in the NFL. It's just a rare kind. They just don't, people don't grow up that way very often. The other thing about tackle that's more important for the outside than it is the inside, and it's why you hear these kind of arguments to move people inside, is that tackles are just running around a lot more because they're taking longer steps every time, whereas a guard and a center, they really just get up and push. So from a conditioning angle and, like, a cardio angle, they're just doing less of, you know, the kind of run around, get you gassed kind of work. So you'll see, like, guards and centers and, you know, defensive tackles and stuff, they'll have belly fat, and that's okay because at a certain point you just want to be heavier and more difficult to move. But for tackles, they need to be a lot leaner, and a lot more of that needs to be, like, muscle and strength. So when it comes to moving a tackle inside to guard, like we've been talking about with Riley Reiff, or like we did with Mike Remmers, you need a different skill set, right? Like we talked about, for a tackle, you need to be covering lots of ground, and you need to be a little bit more patient with the timing of throwing a punch, because if you throw your hands out too early, it's really easy for the defensive lineman to swipe them out of the way and then get past you because you can't use your arms in the block anymore. But if you throw them too late, they've gone by you, right? Or you've lost your leverage, or you've kind of lost your window. So timing is very important. It's a lot more of a feel thing versus, you know, a lot of the work on the interior is kind of deciding pre-snap what you're going to do and then just executing, and executing as quickly as possible. So it's a different skill set, and it requires different learning. Not to mention the difference between, you know, moving from the left to the right. If you've tried to do anything like left-handed that you usually do right-handed, you know, it's like awkward and takes a little bit to learn. That is a difficult transition. All of this goes to illustrate the point that moving along the offensive line is not free. There's a cost to it. It's a learning curve, right? When you have spent your whole career doing one thing and then you are asked to do something similar, but definitely not the same, you're going to take a little bit of time to get used to it, and you are not going to be as good at that thing as you would have been at the thing you're really used to doing. That's just the way that humans work. So moving people in and out of the line like the Vikings have been doing, it shouldn't be surprising to us that bites the Vikings more often than it helps them. And all of this goes to say that it comes with a cost. And maybe that's better, right? Especially with like draft picks. Maybe the cost of learning a new position is worth, you know, playing a position that you're not going to get completely owned at because your arms are too short. But whatever cost that is, it's always worth weighing against what you're actually trying to accomplish. So that is going to do it for this, another kind of football philosophy-esque episode of Locked On Vikings. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for bearing with me through a little bit more of a nebulous week of the show as we kind of get through this dead period. I hope you guys are enjoying the show. Thank you all who are, a lot of people are like DMing me just their thoughts and opinions. I love it. I might not always respond, but I promise you I'm reading it every single time. So thank you all so much for just engaging and telling me your thoughts. I always love talking football. I will see you guys all tomorrow. And until next time, vote in the pain bracket and skull.